Welcome back to The Deep Dive. Today, you've brought us a really fascinating body of work. It's titled The Origin of Divine Wisdom.
It is.
And our mission here, it feels pretty ambitious. We are trying to cut through, you know, all the usual clutter of modern life to find the absolute starting line for real insight.
Right.
We're not looking for life hacks. Mm-hmm. We're really just trying to extract the core definition of true wisdom as this material presents it.
And, you know, it's immediately clear that this text is throwing down a gauntlet to, well, to conventional thinking.
How so?
Most people who are seeking wisdom today, they look outward. They chase high-level degrees. They focus on complex financial instruments where they prioritize networking, you know, knowing the right people.
Right. We're sort of trained to equate all of that knowledge, wealth, connections with wisdom.
Exactly.
If someone is highly educated or you see they're financially successful, we just assume they must have some kind of superior insight into how life works.
And that's precisely where this material steps in. It states pretty flatly that wisdom does not begin with your impressive CV.
Yeah.
Or the size of your portfolio, or even how many contacts you have. The author insists that if we're going to talk about origins, we have to acknowledge that wisdom has a distinct starting point, a beginning.
Just like everything else.
Just like everything else we measure in life.
That emphasis on a fixed starting line is such a powerful metaphor. I mean, every event has one. Your birthday is the start of your year.
The referee's whistle.
Exactly. The referee's whistle starts the game. The bell starts the class. So if we accept that premise, then the search for wisdom needs like a precise location for its genesis.
So if we strip away all those external, those conventional metrics, the diplomas, the bank accounts, where does this text tell us we need to look?
Where do we start?
It takes us directly to his foundational principle, the cornerstone of the entire argument.
Okay, let's unpack this. What is that fundamental starting point that the material establishes?
It is rooted in Proverbs 9.0. And the wording is, well, it's completely unambiguous.
Okay.
It says, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy One is understanding."
Wow.
That single verse just encapsulates the entire premise of the source you shared.
So yep. That is the foundation. Wisdom begins with the fear of God.
Yeah.
But for you, the learner, trying to navigate this, that phrase, fear of God, it immediately needs some deep exploration.
Of course.
In modern terms, fear implies, you know, terror or wanting to run away, apprehension. And if wisdom starts there, that completely changes the nature of the pursuit. So we have to know, what does the author actually mean by fear?
And this is where the synthesis of the material is just essential. The text makes a really careful distinction here.
Mm-hmm.
It clarifies that this concept of fear is not about existential dread or, you know, running from some punitive figure in the sky.
Right.
Instead, it is defined as having a deep-rooted respect and reverence for God.
Deep-rooted respect. That is a game changer.
It is.
It shifts the entire mood from dread to something much more like awe. It acknowledges this immense gap between our finite understanding and an infinite power.
Exactly. But it's not just an emotional state. This respect manifests as action. It involves living in alignment with what is understood to be God's will.
Okay.
The text uses the analogy of a child-parent relationship. But let's expand on that a bit, because the word submission can feel.
Wow.
It can feel charged.
I think that's crucial. For the person seeking insight who is maybe struggling to maintain control in a chaotic world, the idea of submission might sound like intellectual surrender.
Or just giving up your agency.
Yeah, giving up agency. Yeah. Does the text address that tension at all? The difference between a respectful submission and just blind obedience?
It does. And it does that by focusing on the source of the instruction.
Yeah.
That parent-child analogy really helps here. A child often fears disappointing a loving parent, not because they're afraid of being, you know, physically harmed.
Right.
But because they respect the parent's inherent wisdom and love. The fear is really the caution against severing that trusted relationship.
Or crossing boundaries that are actually designed for your own safety.
That's it. So the submission isn't to tyranny, it's to trusted authority. It's an act of recognizing that your own finite knowledge might lead you astray.
While this higher wisdom is guaranteed to lead to a better outcome.
Precisely. It's the difference between respecting the laws of gravity when you're building a bridge versus just ignoring them.
Good analogy.
When you recognize that the source of the law is fundamentally wise and trustworthy, your adherence becomes reverence, not terror.
Mm.
And the source sort of compels you, based on this, to ask a really difficult question of yourself.
Which is?
Am I fully submitted to the will of God? That alignment, that deep respect, is the key that unlocks the next step in the whole process.
Okay, so that defines the starting line and the prerequisite attitude about respect and reverence leading to submission. But that brings up a really practical question. If respect is the starting line, how do we actually get on the track? How do we access that divine wisdom in a way that, you know, impacts our daily decisions?
This is where the material provides a specific roadmap. It details a process where this higher wisdom is imparted directly into our lives, but only when we maintain that state of deep respect and submission.
So this knowledge isn't passive?
No, not at all. It must be actively sought through three specific channels.
This is where the rubber meets the road for the learner. What are those three access points defined in the source material?
They're laid out as three ongoing practices. First, knowing God through His Word.
Okay.
Second, knowing God through community.
Right.
And third, knowing God through prayer. The author is very clear that true wisdom is a result of consistent engagement across all three of these fronts.
Let's break that down, starting with knowing God through His Word. For someone trying to maximize their time and gain clarity, what does the text mean by word? Is this just reading, or is there a specific practical application here?
It goes far beyond just passive reading. The text implies a consistent active engagement aimed at understanding and then applying its principles.
Ah, the application.
Yeah. If wisdom starts with respectful submission, then the word acts as the instruction manual for what that submission looks like in practice. How to treat your neighbors, how to approach money, how to handle conflict. The aha moment here is recognizing it's not about how much you read, but how consistently you seek to apply what you read that day.
So it moves from intellectual knowledge to actionable wisdom. That leads us directly to the second channel.
Yeah.
Community. How does engaging with other people facilitate getting singular divine wisdom?
Well, community acts as the mirror and the accountability structure.
Okay.
Wisdom is never meant to be lived in a vacuum. The text emphasizes that wise counsel often comes through shared experience and diverse perspectives. We all have blind spots.
Everyone does.
And the community, the collective body of people pursuing that same wisdom, helps us see those blind spots. They offer correction, encouragement, real-world models of what submission looks like when it's tested.
So it's essential for making sure that our respect doesn't just warp into some kind of personal legalism.
That's a key distinction, exactly. The community keeps the pursuit balanced and relational. It prevents the individual from becoming some isolated expert.
Okay, so the third channel is prayer. Often prayer is viewed as simply, you know, asking for things. How does the author redefine prayer in the context of receiving wisdom?
In this context, prayer is redefined as active listening and alignment. If we are starting from that position of submission, your will, not mine, then prayer becomes less about requesting specific outcomes.
And more about listening.
And more about listening for direction and aligning our own desires with that higher wisdom. It's seeking understanding first before you request intervention. When you go to that quiet space, the focus is on discerning whose wisdom you're actually seeking, yours or God's.
That deep intentional alignment through word, community, and prayer. That's the mechanism. So what are the immediate tangible benefits promised to the listener who commits to this? What are the practical aha moments?
The material promises outcomes centered around peace and clarity. It states that situations and decisions that otherwise appear tangled and confusing, they start to become clearer and clearer.
And what about difficult choices?
Furthermore, when you're faced with difficult choices, it says doors open that come with a profound sense of peace and clarity, a sense of rightness, even if the path ahead is still challenging.
That promise of peace in the middle of a complex decision is exactly what people are seeking when they feel just overwhelmed by information overload.
It is.
It's not necessarily getting the easy way out. It's receiving an internal calm about what the next step is.
That's the critical nuance. The text makes a point of underscoring that these positive results, the clarity, the peace, the ease of navigation, they are not a reward for suddenly becoming intellectually superior or achieving some higher IQ.
So it's not about being smart.
Not at all. These are presented as direct promised results that occur simply because the wisdom of God is being actively sought after through submission. It reframes achievement entirely. It's not self-driven intelligence. It's divinely assisted understanding.
And that leads us to the ultimate test this material poses, which is, whose wisdom are you seeking, yours or God's? That question sets up the final and most specific answer the text provides. It moves wisdom from an abstract principle to something profoundly tangible.
Indeed, because if wisdom is accessed through these consistent practices, the next logical question for you, the listener, is, How can I tap into this source of wisdom person to person, you know, when I need it most?
And the text anticipates this.
It anticipates this entirely relational need.
And the answer it provides is so simple, yet it's revolutionary in its implications. Jesus. Wisdom is personified.
This fundamentally shifts the means of acquisition. You don't just study principles, you establish a connection with the source itself. The material supports this with a powerful New Testament citation.
What's the verse?
It's 1 Corinthians 1:30, which says, God has united you with Christ Jesus. For our benefit, God made him to be wisdom itself.
Wow. So that means wisdom is no longer just a characteristic or a set of rules. It is a unified presence. This connection between an abstract concept and a specific person. It just shifts the entire trajectory of this deep dive.
And this is where the author draws the starkest possible contrast with what the world prioritizes. The text sets up this really powerful rhetorical list of human achievement.
Okay.
We can obsess over accumulating all the right connections in business and politics. We can pursue massive financial security with hundreds of thousands of dollars in the bank. We can even chase multiple advanced degrees, you know, the ultimate symbols of human knowledge.
It's the ultimate worldly checklist for success. But according to the source material, if you have all of that, the connections, the money, the deep human knowledge, but you lack the wisdom personified in Jesus, what's the conclusion?
The material, drawing on the wisdom of Solomon, dismisses the pursuit of all those things without first knowing wisdom personified as being like chasing after the wind.
Chasing after the wind.
An exercise in ultimate futility.
And why is that? Chasing the wind suggests immense effort for zero lasting substance.
Because the author maintains that all true knowledge and all lasting wisdom begins with the one who is wisdom himself.
Yeah.
If you start your pursuit anywhere else, you start with the money, the degrees, or the networks, you are building a structure without a foundation.
And it'll eventually collapse.
The pursuit, however diligent you are, will ultimately collapse or just prove unsatisfying because it missed the core origin.
That is a phenomenal synthesis of this material. It takes a philosophical idea and makes it specific, actionable, and entirely relational. It gives the listener a clear starting point and a clear roadmap. So as we conclude this deep dive, let's just distill the core actionable insights that the source leaves us with to carry forward into our day.
The focus really has to shift from acquiring knowledge about wisdom to maintaining a living connection with wisdom personified.
So first, the text advises you to maintain that connection, keeping wisdom Jesus close to you. Make it an active daily presence, not just some historical reference.
Second, when you inevitably encounter difficulties today, lean actively on wisdom Jesus for understanding, rather than just defaulting to your own intellect or relying only on external resources.
And third, maybe the most powerful challenge for daily action. In every meeting, every personal encounter, every negotiation or decision you face today, just pause and ask yourself two simple questions.
What are they?
What would wisdom Jesus do, and how would wisdom Jesus respond? This forces immediate alignment.
And finally, the text leaves us with a concluding thought, something that encourages deeper personal exploration.
What's the final challenge?
If you are new to this concept and you don't yet know wisdom in this personified form, there is a simple entry point. Read one of the Gospels, the eyewitness accounts, to learn exactly how wisdom was demonstrated, expressed, and personified within a human being.
That is a truly thorough deep dive into the origin of divine wisdom, providing not just the definition, but the practical access points as well.
Mission accomplished.
Yeah.
Dive deep and keep seeking that clarity.